Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of the Battle Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Today we're diving into a topic that absolutely fascinates me, Viking arm rings.
Exactly. And let me start with a question. What are typical status symbols today? When you see someone and immediately think, okay, this person is successful?
Maybe a fancy watch? Designer jewelry? An expensive car?
Yes, exactly. These visible signs of wealth and status. For the Vikings, arm rings were among the most important status symbols, alongside elaborate brooches, weapons, and belt fittings. But there was so much more to them than today's Rolex.
In what way more?
They were genuine symbols of power and status, worn by warriors, chieftains, and wealthy members of the community. A massive silver arm ring immediately said, "This person has significance, has influence, has connections."
And the material played a huge role. Bronze was more accessible and more widely worn. But even there, quality varied enormously. An expertly crafted bronze ring was still a valuable object. Silver or gold? That marked the absolute top of the elite. Archaeological finds show this very clearly. In wealthy graves, you consistently find these massive precious metal rings.
Right, and speaking of materials, it's also fascinating that the Vikings...
That the quality of craftsmanship itself was already a statement.
Exactly. A roughly hammered bronze ring is something completely different from an intricately decorated silver arm ring with those typical animal motifs, snake or dragon-like heads. The craftsmanship also reflected trade connections. The Vikings had contacts all the way to Byzantium and the Caliphate.
What always fascinates me about this, the Vikings are often reduced to this plunderer cliché. But they were highly skilled craftsmen and traders. The metalworking techniques they mastered were sophisticated, on par with the most advanced cultures of their time.
Absolutely. And what many people don't know, these arm rings also had a practical function in trade. In the so-called hex-silver system, jewelry could be used as currency by weight. Sometimes arm rings were even cut up to pay smaller amounts.
So basically a portable wallet on your wrist?
You could see it that way. Although the main function was probably really about status. The cutting was part of the bullion economy system, so it was quite common practice, not a last resort.
And this fascination continues to this day. In the LARP scene, in reenactment, but also simply as a fashion statement, Viking arm rings are everywhere.
We'll get into that in detail today. We look at what made these arm rings so special. The symbols, the designs, the different styles. Runes, dragons, knotwork patterns. And of course, what to look out for if you want to get an authentic replica today.
That's always the thing with historical jewelry. Proper care. But we've already covered that in another episode.
So, bronze, silver, gold. Warriors, traders, chieftains. The full spectrum of Viking culture wrapped up in a single piece of jewelry. Sound good?
Sounds like an exciting journey. I can't wait.
Then let's get started.
What's particularly important about arm rings is the social dimension. These weren't just accessories you bought because they looked nice. They were bestowed, gifted, inherited.
Chieftains were even called ring givers. Although, strictly speaking, the term comes from Old English poetry. In Beowulf, King Hrothgar is the famous ring-giver. But the idea fits perfectly with Norse retinue culture. A good leader shares his wealth with his followers, and arm rings were a very concrete sign of this bond.
You wear your chieftain's arm ring, and everyone immediately sees this person belongs, has fought, has proven themselves, was rewarded. But the symbolism went even deeper. Strength, courage, family affiliation. All of this was expressed through these pieces of jewelry.
And interestingly, not everyone wore the same material. A common warrior might have had a simple bronze ring. But a chieftain or successful trader? They wore silver or gold. The social hierarchy was literally visible on your wrist.
With the symbolism, there were different levels. On one hand, the personal meaning. Then the protective function through...
Through runes and other decorations, exactly. Although we need to put that in proper context. The Vikings believed that certain symbols brought protection and luck. From today's perspective, we'd call that superstition. But for people back then, it was absolutely real.
The runes on arm rings could contain personal messages or formulas that were hoped to provide protection. This was part of their worldview, their spirituality, no different from amulets in other cultures.
What I also find fascinating, there are references in the sagas to oaths sworn on sacred rings, so-called temple rings that were kept in sanctuaries.
This sometimes gets mixed up today with personal arm rings. The Vikings TV series made this quite popular, that image of someone swearing on their arm ring. But historically speaking, these were two different things. The oath rings were cultic objects kept in the temple. Personal arm rings on the wrist had other functions.
Yes, and that's a really important point to emphasize. So, the arm rings were more like the visible sign of an already existing bond, not the object on which oaths were sworn.
That's right. But the emotional attachment to these pieces of jewelry was still enormous. Arm rings were passed down through generations, as family heirlooms, as signs of continuity. Imagine, you're wearing your grandfather's arm ring, who might have fought in Ireland or Byzantium.
That, of course, makes these pieces something completely different from modern jewelry. There's history in them, identity.
And the practical component, too. Valuable jewelry played a role in marriage alliances. Arm rings could be part of the bride price, dowry, or mourning gift, as a sign of connection between families. But note, the ritual arm ring exchange, like with wedding rings, that's actually a modern reenactment invention, not a historical practice.
And the quality of craftsmanship also said something about trade connections. An arm ring with motifs showing Byzantine or Arabic influence, the wearer or their family had contacts far beyond Scandinavia.
What's remarkable is that all these layers of meaning came together. A single arm ring could simultaneously be a status marker, family heirloom, protective symbol, and sign of a political alliance. This density of meaning, modern jewelry pieces rarely have that.
And that's exactly what makes these arm rings so interesting today for people who engage with the Viking Age. It's simply not just decoration. Now it's getting technical, because these arm rings didn't just fall from the sky. Real skill went into them. The Vikings were masters of metalworking.
How should we picture this in practice? They didn't have modern tools.
For elaborate pieces, it was done through the so-called lost wax casting process. It works like this. The smith first models a wax form from beeswax, completely shapes the arm ring in advance with all the details, animal heads, patterns, everything. Then the whole thing is encased in a mixture of clay and sand.
And then heated?
Exactly, in a furnace. The wax melts out, drains away, hence lost wax, and what remains is a hollow space in exactly the shape of the arm ring. Then you pour the liquid metal in there.
So each piece was practically unique. The wax model is gone after casting.
For elaborate pieces, yes. For simpler rings, there were also stone molds that could be used multiple times. But the really intricate work, dragon heads, interlaced patterns, those were made using the lost wax process.
And then came the finishing work, right? The raw casting doesn't look perfect right away.
Right, that's when files, punches, whetstones came into play. The surface was smoothed, casting seams removed. And then the fine work. With small punches, additional patterns were struck in, lines drawn. This was precision work.
And these tools are archaeologically documented too. In Hedebü, for example, complete smithing workshops have been excavated. Crucibles, molds, tools. These were real production centers.
Hedebü is a good keyword because that leads directly to the material question. Because, and this surprises many people, Scandinavia had hardly any precious metal deposits of its own.
So the silver came from...
From everywhere. Mainly Arabic dirhams. These Islamic silver coins flowed north by the tens of thousands. On Gotland alone, over 700 silver hoards have been found, full of these coins.
So they traded with the Arab world.
Via the Russian rivers, the Volga, Dnieper, all the way to the Caliphate and Byzantium. The Vikings traded furs, amber, honey, wax, and unfortunately also slaves, for silver. And that was then melted down.
The so-called hex silver. They simply cut up coins and old jewelry and traded by weight. That was basically the raw material for new arm rings.
That also explains the material hierarchy. Bronze was relatively easily available. Often recycled scrap metal, fittings, utensils. Silver came through long-distance trade. And gold?
That was really rare. Byzantine gold, mainly. And that remained reserved for the absolute elite. The amount of gold jewelry from the Viking Age is tiny compared to silver.
Which shows the trade connections. A chieftain with a gold arm ring, they might have had contacts all the way to Constantinople or the Caliphate. Or the gold came through intermediary trade, tributes like Danegeld, war booty, or recycling. That wasn't just wealth, that was a statement about your reach.
And about your smith's abilities. Gold is softer and technically easier to shape, but with such precious material, absolutely no mistakes could be made. You really needed the best craftsman for that.
That brings me to a point that's often underestimated. These smiths were highly specialized. They could do fine work that we do with machines today, and all by hand, with bellows and charcoal furnaces.
When you hold a good replica made using traditional methods today, you can somehow feel it. That density, the surface. It's different from mass-produced goods.
And that connects us with the originals. The same technique, the same craftsmanship, just a few centuries later.
Now to what makes these arm rings so special? The decorations. Because they didn't just hammer any old thing onto them. Every motif had its meaning.
The variety is truly impressive. You have animal depictions, interlaced knotwork patterns, runes, and often combined on a single piece.
Among the animal motifs, dragons and serpents stand out in particular. Dragons are often associated with strength, and serpents with protection, or both together. The boundaries were fluid there, because dragon and serpent often merged in Norse imagination.
Think of Jörmungandr, the Midgard serpent. That's simultaneously a serpent and essentially a dragon-like being. This ambivalence is also found in the jewelry. An arm ring with serpent heads at the ends, is that protection? Is that strength? Probably both.
And then the knot work patterns. I personally find those the most artistic. These endlessly interlaced lines without beginning or end. To us, that doesn't seem like just decoration.
No, that's... at least, that's how we interpret it today, right? Infinity, the interconnectedness of all things. A fascinating concept that actually only emerged in the 19th century during Romanticism and the Celtic Revival. Everything is connected. Everything flows into each other. Whether this held such deep symbolism for the Vikings themselves or was more artistic decoration, we honestly don't know for certain.
Yes, and you find these patterns on runestones, on ship prows, everywhere. It was a central design element of Norse art. Particularly beautiful on jewelry because it wraps around the wrist. Essentially infinite.
And Thor's hammer? That appears frequently too.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
Mjölnir was one of the most popular symbols of all. Interestingly, especially in the late Viking Age, when Christianity was spreading, that's when Thor's hammer became almost a statement of faith. I'm staying with the old beliefs.
A kind of identity marker, similar to the cross for Christians, just for followers of the Norse gods.
And then there are, of course, the runes. They're a topic in themselves because...
because there's a lot of romanticization involved. This really needs to be viewed with nuance. Runes were first and foremost a writing system. Letters used to write names, dedications, short messages.
Right. On historical jewelry pieces, you mostly find running inscriptions. Who the piece belongs to, who made it, sometimes short blessing formulas.
The idea that individual runes were worn as isolated symbols, algis for protection, tivas for victory, that's largely a modern interpretation. It comes from the esotericism of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Which doesn't mean the Vikings didn't ascribe special power to their runes. They certainly believed that certain combinations of characters could bring protection or luck. But as inscriptions, as formulas, not as individual signs with fixed meanings.
That's an important distinction. The people of the Viking Age lived in a world where the supernatural was very real. That signs could have power was part of their worldview. From today's perspective, we would say that was their belief.
And this belief doesn't make these pieces any less fascinating. On the contrary, when someone had a formula inscribed on their arm ring, there was genuine conviction behind it. That wasn't decoration. That was meaning.
Which brings us to the question, how do you distinguish decorative from meaning-bearing patterns?
That's actually not always clear-cut. There are finds with clear, readable runic inscriptions. Those were obviously meant semantically. And then there are stylized symbols that look like runes, but don't allow for any meaningful reading.
Pseudo-runes, they're called. They were probably used purely decoratively because they simply looked good.
Which shows that the Vikings did distinguish between aesthetic value and meaning. An arm ring could be beautiful and meaningful. Or just beautiful.
This complexity makes interpretation so exciting today. Every piece is like a little puzzle. Now, we've talked a lot about history, but Viking arm rings are very much alive today too.
Absolutely. In the LARP scene, in reenactment, in cosplay, you see these arm rings everywhere. They're super popular and can really enhance a portrayal, even though not every Viking persona needs to have one.
For you, as someone who's regularly at events, what makes a good arm ring there?
It depends on what you need it for. In reenactment, where authenticity counts, you want historically accurate designs and traditional materials. Bronze, silver, no modern fantasy elements, no exaggerated proportions.
And in LARP, it's more relaxed?
You have more freedom there. The arm ring can be a bit larger, more dramatic. The dragon heads can be exaggerated. The main thing is, it fits your character and the story you want to tell.
But quality remains important.
An arm ring you wear on your wrist has to withstand a lot. Especially at events. You're moving, you might be fighting, you're in the rain. That's where the wheat quickly separates from the chaff. Cheap cast pieces with thin spots will break eventually.
What's fascinating is that these arm rings function almost like back then as recognition signs. In the scene, you immediately see who puts effort into their portrayal.
A really beautiful, heavy bronze ring stands out. People come up and ask where you got it. It's almost a conversation starter.
And outside the scene too, you see Viking arm rings more and more often, as everyday jewelry, as a statement piece.
They fit surprisingly well with modern outfits. This robust yet artistic style, it has something timeless. It works just as well with jeans and a leather jacket as with a more elegant look. I sometimes wear my serpent arm ring just casually in everyday life.
Do you have tips on what to look for when buying?
The craftsmanship is important. Clean casting edges, well-executed details. With bronze or silver, the material should be even, no thin spots. And the ring has to fit your wrist. That sounds obvious, but an arm ring that's too tight or too loose is uncomfortable and doesn't look good either.
And then the question. Do I want a specific motif? Serpents, dragons, knots?
Some deliberately choose symbols that mean something to them. Others go purely by aesthetics. Both are completely legitimate. There are no wrong reasons to choose a piece.
What excites me so much about this whole topic
is that these pieces truly connect past and present. You're wearing something on your wrist that held the same meaning 1,000 years ago. The same forms, similar materials, similar emotions behind it.
That's beautifully put. These arm rings are simply more than decoration. They carry history with them, quite literally.
For everyone who's now curious, at battlemerchant.com you'll find a lovely selection of Viking arm rings in various styles and materials. And on the blog there, you'll find many more topics about history and historical equipment.
That's it for today from us. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. Thanks for listening.
Until next time.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your swords sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.